got your text today, so I don't know whose button I pushed, but 251-343-0106. We will respond to your text here over the next couple segments as we head into and go beyond the 10 o'clock hour. Still to come on the program from Alabama Today, April Marie Fogle. That's in about an hour from now, 2 hours from now. State Representative J.B. Keel, who was he was the sponsor of Alabama's prohibitional ballot harvesting that takes it from what it was a misdemeanor to a felony. And yesterday up in Clay County, six counts, I believe, or seven counts of absentee ballot fraud. So we'll talk to him about his law. And I think this is a very good, very, very good warning signal, if anything, to Democrats looking to engage in this age-old practice of ballot harvesting in this upcoming election cycle. However, joining us now on the line, he is the author of One Generation Away. He's got a book of it. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But Brian Hollihan joins us on the line. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, good morning. Great to catch up. Hope you're doing well. Appreciate the opportunity to come on.
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. Well, let's kick it off here before we'll follow up later again with it. But you have an event tomorrow at the Page Appellate Bookstore in Fair Oaks. Tell us a little bit about it.
Correct. Yes, sir. So my debut book, One Generation Away, came out about a month ago now, and I've been crisscrossing the country talking to as many Americans as I could about the book. But next Wednesday, I start my senior year of high school here in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and I'm going to be a little bit more limited in my travel across the nation. So today we're announcing my Sweet Home Alabama tour. Well, I'll be going to 10 different counties across the state to speak to local Alabamians and do some book signings and speeches. And I thought of no better place to kick off that tour than beautiful Fairhope, Alabama. So tomorrow morning from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., I will be signing books at Page and Pallet in downtown Fairhope, and excited to see all of your audience there.
All right. Well, we'll hit that one more time. But if you're out and about tomorrow, pay Brylett a visit. Well, let's talk about the book itself. Yeah. One Generation Away, taking from the taken from the comments from Ronald Reagan. There, what's the takeaway here?
Yeah. So obviously, you made reference to it. Reagan's famous quotes: "Freedom's one generation away from total extinction." This is the 20-year anniversary of the Gipper's passing, but I think his timeless words of wisdom are really more true now than ever before. And not to be a fearmonger here today, Jeff, but I believe that my generation is that generation on the brink of total extinction. It's up to us to save this country before we grow up in a nation of tyranny. And we're kind of getting towards there, Jeff. And so I wrote this book in response to constantly hearing the same thing that you're hearing from American people. We do not, regardless of what generation you're in, we do not have hope in the future of this country. We want to. And this book is inspiring that hope. It's inspiring the next generation to get involved. It's also for parents out there, parents who are fed up with the indoctrination they're seeing in our school systems. I want to push back against that. Grandparents that really don't even recognize the America that we live in today. This book's for all of them. And if you can't make it to book signing tomorrow, signed copies are available on my website. It's brylandbook.com or Amazon, wherever's easiest for you. But we'd love to see you in person. I'd love to shake your hand and greet you at Page and Pallet tomorrow.
Well, and I guess it's this, like you're trying to write about this generation, and I guess the idea here is things could go either way, right? There's a kind of a fork in the road, and what would you think needs to be the game plan here?
Yeah, so I obviously born and raised in Tuscaloosa, so college football's kind of in my backyard, and I make a lot of football references in the book, and the main one is a chapter called "Time to Get on Offense," and that really needs to be the message of the Republican Party going forward. We have to get on offense if we want to win these elections. I constantly say that Republicans have the right message, we're on the right side of history. We have a messaging problem with getting our message out there. And when I took over the RNC as chairman of the Youth Advisory Council, the very first thing I told the team in that meeting was the days of being able to take out an ad in the Sunday paper to get our message out are over. We have to modernize. We have to reach out to social media. We have to go to campuses directly. We have to reach out to fraternities and sororities and do grassroots efforts that way. We can't just keep being the grand old party and expect to win every election because we're not, and there's a problem clearly. So I think we have to get on offense.
And that's interesting because, like, you're going to kind of look at it like what's going on in this presidential election. And sometimes I think maybe we get a little too caught up as Republicans in what they're saying in the media, in the mainstream media. You know, because as a guy who's been watching this, I've been at this game for like 20 years now. I mean, you know when the media have their orchestrated talking points. The best example is the trying to make J.D. Vance out to be quote-unquote weird. And, I mean, you just see it throughout the media, and you see it over and over and over and over again. So I guess like the point is, like, how do you – Republicans don't really have anything like that, a tool in their tool chest to kind of counter that. And you talk about the messaging. I think the messaging is there. Especially Donald Trump's figured out his own way, sort of punch him in the mouth. But I think a Trump is like a once in a lifetime type of politician. What is a good sound strategy for overcoming the mainstream media?
Yeah, well, a few things there. You're spot on with President Trump. He's the ultimate influencer. And so as I constantly, you know, encourage him and his team to embrace social media, he's already on it because, you know, that's really how he got to start in 2015. He started tweeting. So he understands the importance of being on social media. As for the weird comments we've seen be made about J.D. Vance lately, you know what I think is weird, Jeff? I think the Democrats that support abortion up until the day of birth, I think that's weird, and I think that's disgusting, and that's what we need to be calling out constantly because they're the radicals, and we're obviously not. We're the same people with stability, and that's really what my generation is drawing towards. So I constantly think you said, you know, the media and how they're kind of getting around with their talking points. The perfect example of that was last week when, within a matter of an hour or two, every single talking head on TV coronated Kamala Harris as the next nominee. Even the day or two before, they were saying that she needs to get off the ticket. She's a problem for Biden. She's really the issue, that they kind of need to move away from her. It was a mistake. It was a DEI hire. Within an hour or two, they all circle the wagons around her and are supporting her because you could tell they got their talking point. And so we have to push back against that. We have to understand the narrative of this isn't how this is going to work. And the big thing, and I think this is something that we're going to start seeing the next few days, we've already kind of seen it with her, especially going into the convention, and I think you'll agree with me here, is that she's going to try to separate herself from Biden as much as possible. And we can't let her do that. This is the Biden-Harris administration, and we have to hold her accountable for every single action that was made because, remember, she sat in the Oval Office when Biden made those horrible decisions. She sat in the Situation Room during the Afghanistan withdrawal. She was right there being inept with these policies. And also, she lied directly to the face of the American people for 3.5 years and told us that Biden was sharp as a tack and fit as a fiddle.
Right. And I you know, all of that is just like ammo, but there's just nowhere to unload it, I think. So, you know, I just talk radio and Fox News, but those are kind of echo chambery. And look, the MSNBC and CNN is their echo chamber, but the mainstream media, there are still people, believe it or not, Brian, today that watch the evening news. That's where the problem is. I mean, I hear you on the social media stuff, but like, what portion of America really watches this stuff? It's just what we got. The problem I think Republicans have, and I don't know the answer to this, is that our institutions as a country just seem to go along with whatever the mainstream media, left-wing conventional wisdom of the day is. And how do you overcome that? And maybe it is social media. Maybe it's your generation who will now start relying on social media more. So we need a better social media strategy. But that, to me, is right now, they are just, when ABC News' David Muir declares something, it's just treated as if it's fact, even though it's kind of tainted in this left-wing bias.
Oh, you're spot on. And what I constantly say and what I think needs to happen, you know, we label teachers that are spreading indoctrination and propaganda as activists. We need to start saying the same for journalists who go on TV and read straight off the DNC talking point emails. Those are activists as well, and that's something that we need to get a head start on.
Joined by Brian Hollihan here on the program. He's got a book out. He's going to be at Fairhope at Page and Pallet tomorrow at noon, One Generation Away, Why Now is the Time to Restore American Freedom. Brian, let's talk about your role in the RNC. Just had our convention up in Milwaukee. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to the Democrat National Convention, but I thought, I mean, and especially given that it's on the heels of an assassination attempt of the party standard bearer, I thought it was it wasn't over the top. It wasn't, I mean, not controversial in any sense. I thought overall it was a good blocking and tackling convention. What are some takeaways you have from that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was there the whole week. I was on the ground serving as the chairman of the advisory council, and I'll say that what I saw on the floor, what I saw walking around during the day when the cameras were off, was the same thing that everybody's been saying, unity. And I think from the moment that President Trump surprised everybody by walking in that room Monday night, you know, 48 hours after being shot in the head, the message was clear that we are not going to back down. We're going to fight, and we're going to win over people, not scare people away and not, you know, take the low road and attack our opponents. Trump made that clear in his speech on that Thursday night that he took the high road. He could have spent that opportunity to be a typical politician and attack his opponents, attack the radical left that shot him in the head. Instead, he took the high road and attempted to be the president for all of America, not just for the Republican Party. And I think that's really what's going to help him in the polls as we go into November if he continues to keep that message. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I think it was great to have so many young delegates, especially from Alabama. We had a really cool amount of young delegates that were sitting there on the floor representing my generation, and I was pretty excited to see that.
I think Alabama had a pretty decent presence there. Katie Britt speaking on the first night, coach there as the chairman of the delegation. But then you saw throughout the event, a lot of Alabama on it. I mean, Alabama is sort of a bellwether for the Republican Party, I think.
Yeah, you're spot on. And also we had Vicki Drummond, the legend in Alabama politics, doing the roll call vote when we actually did the nomination process. So she was up there center stage, every camera facing her as we officially nominated Trump and Vance as our nominee. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, so y'all keep that in mind. Otherwise, this presidential election cycle, I mean, ask you to play pundit here. How are you feeling about it? Obviously, you're talking into a talk radio Breitbart guy here. The Kamala Harris honeymoon. I don't think they could keep up this intensity. And I think they've done an okay job of rolling her out. I'm really shocked that there wasn't more turmoil about this switch, that there was no pushback. Not that they kicked Biden off the ballot. Clearly, there was something wrong there. But that they just coronated Harris without any discussion, without any sort of deliberation. I thought that was going to be something they would have to deal with. Well, it turns out that was not an issue. So here we are, and like I said, they're just hitting on all cylinders for her. You have to kind of see it, know what's going on to understand it. But on the other hand, I mean, this is really, it's so intense right now. I don't think it can last for the next 96 days.
I don't think it can either. And you mentioned it right there. The party of democracy, this party that's allegedly saving democracy this election, gave a slap in the face to their primary voters by just switching the top of the ticket with no contest of election, just circled the wagons as Democrats typically do and moved on forward. And I agree, we're in a honeymoon period right now with Kamala, but I don't think they can keep it up for much longer. I think eventually, maybe around the time the VP noms announce next Tuesday, that there'll be some more turmoil, there'll be some more intensity around that. I think at some point, people are going to see through this kind of fake Kamala that they put up there in the media, painted this picture of her being, this perfect candidate, and clearly she's not. That's why she dropped out so early in 2020. And so I think there's a lot of attack ammo on Kamala. There's a lot of areas that we can go after for her failed policies as VP and her radical agenda as a senator. And so as we continue to get those messages, whether that's on TV, social media, print, whatever, over the next 90 so days, I think we're going to see a shift in polling. But I do think, and this is something nobody's talking about, you can't underestimate Kamala and you can't underestimate the DNC right now, because an October surprise has not happened yet. It's first day of August.
But I will say, I think the threat of an October surprise, I mean, this is Donald Trump's third time running for president. And as the party nominee, I mean, what else is left? What else are they going to do to Donald Trump at this point? Kamala Harris, much different story there. We don't know. I anticipate something. But it just as it goes, I mean, I'm already hearing this, that they're going to try to swift boat her or whatever. I just think, and whoever she picks as her VP nominee, and Brian, here's the deal. These VP nominee vetting processes are pretty intense. They take months. They're having to play hurry-up offense here. which I think leaves, they're going to have to leave some stones unturned. They're not going to get answers on everything. And my guess, I mean, there's not really, they don't have the ideal choice in front of them either. It looks to me it's Mark Kelly or Josh Shapiro. And each of them, they'll overthink this, they always do, but each of them have their drawbacks.
Oh, they definitely do. I think both of them you win a state with, but I think you just win a state. You either win Arizona or Pennsylvania. That's kind of it in that regard. I think with Vance, we could win a lot of the Midwest and have an opportunity to win multiple states there, which I think was a smart move in that regard. But you're totally right. With the VP, you know, that's something that Trump spent, you know, close to a year considering, maybe even more than that. And she's having, like, what, 2 weeks to completely vet these people to do this. I don't even think that they're looking at, you know, their top stars or the brightest people. I think they just said they're going to try to find the best old white guy possible to pick and move forward and just kind of, you know, go and not, you know, talk about it too much or think about it too much. So I'm very interested. I've heard Mark Kelly a lot. I've heard Josh Shapiro a lot. Do you think there's one that's maybe at the top, or you think they're both at the same level right now?
I think slightly Shapiro, only because there's more electoral college votes in Pennsylvania than there are in Arizona, and that may be more important. That may be the calculus here. Hey, brother, we gotta get out of here before we let you go. One more time, folks want to come check you out tomorrow. Give them the deets.
Yeah, I will be kicking off my Sweet Home Alabama tour at Page and Pallet in downtown Fairhope from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Signing books. Come say hey. We'd love to meet you.
All right, Brian Hyann, ladies and gentlemen. Brian, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jeff. You have a great week.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.